Hello, good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic the First Pioneers podcast. This podcast is all about the Pioneer format, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I'm Kevin Finkel, joined here by my co-host and a special guest.
Hello, everybody. This is Ryan, the cardboard samurai out of the Tokyo area of Japan. And yeah, today we have a special guest.
So introducing our guest here, you know, I think if you guys have been paying attention, you may have heard that we had some very cool announcements about Pioneer Challenge decks coming out. Those will be released pretty soon, and if you are like us and you've been paying attention to a lot of Pioneer news, no excuse if you haven't, but you may have noticed we haven't talked too much about them yet, and I think that's because we were waiting for today, when we've got some very exciting news and a very special guest. We are joined here by Michael Hinderocker, and you are the designer behind these Pioneer decks for Wizards of the Coast, is that right?
Yeah, this is a... This is a project that I was the lead designer for. It's something that I care about a lot, and I'm pretty happy with how they came out.
So can we get some more background information on, you know, kind of like your, you know, magic history and, you know, accomplishments, et cetera, you know, before we jump into things?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a game designer at Wizards of the Coast. I have a background playing competitive Magic. I played a lot of Grand Prix and Pro Tours from probably like 2016 to 2018, roughly. I started as a play design contractor around the end of 2018, got converted to a full-time employee, and have been there for the last few years. So working on standard sets and sometimes supplemental products like this.
Yeah, I'd like to
expand. Excellent. And as far as... go ahead,
Ryan. I was going to say, I'd like to expand on what you've worked on, if you don't mind sharing.
I work on the play design team, so I've worked on sets from Theros Beyond Death forward. So most every standard set that comes out, I touch some of the cards in there, try mm-hmm. to improve them, work on them, get everything in good shape for release.
Now, I know we've had like Gavin on the show before, and you know, he talked about cards that he designed. Is there any card that you kind of designed that you're kind of proud of, I guess you could say?
there are a lot of cards where I think I make small contributions, but okay. There are no cards I'm comfortable taking full credit for.
Okay. It's a team effort.
It is. Design is a collaborative process. And I think in general, I'm happiest helping others' work be as good as mm-hmm. it can be. And that's really fulfilling to me.
Okay. Okay. Good to hear. Kevin, do you want to kind of introduce the topic a little bit more in depth, or...
Yeah, so I was going to introduce a topic. I did still want to ask, though, just a little bit about Pioneer specifically, is what kind of your background either playing or getting to know Pioneer is, because we are specifically a Pioneer podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when we were talking about Pioneer internally, it's something I'm really interested in. Pioneer really covers the cards that I'm most familiar with. I started playing, I'd played some like as a kid and quit for about 10 years. I started playing again around Dragons of Tarkir. So Pioneer really covers the cards that I feel like I've played the most with. So it's kind of a natural entry point for me. And I've played a fair amount on Magic Online, especially early in Pioneer's life cycle. Just really, it encapsulates the Magic that I know and love.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that. You know, that sounds a lot like my story. I played as a kid because my parents played, my older brother played, and then once I had to start, you know, buying my own cards, couldn't afford it very much, quit around Mirrodin and came back. You know, a Fate Reforged pre-release is the last time I started playing and been just playing a lot since then. So I'm right there with you, and for me, Pioneer fits exactly into that timeline.
Yeah, we're really happy that the formats came to be because, you know, all of us here, I think, wouldn't be here on this podcast if it wasn't for, you know, the Pioneer formats. You know, it's something we can all get excited about.
So as far as the topic for today, so we did start to preface it that these Pioneer Challenger decks are coming out, and this is something that it's a product they're putting out. Did we see the price point for them yet? I don't know if that matters yet, but I know that they should be coming out in about 2 weeks. And these are all, they're four, you know, basically right out the box Pioneer decks that you could play. They're based on existing decks that are in Pioneer, and they look pretty strong. You know, I really liked when Wizards made these kind of pre-made competitive targeted products in the past, and these ones look really interesting. So that's why we were especially excited to have you on, get a little bit of an idea of like how these were designed, what they were aiming for, and you know how they play against each other, a little bit of a preview of what these are going to be mm-hmm. like.
Yeah, is yeah. there an MSRP?
I can also Google that.
That I've heard most of the local game stores are saying it's going to be around $50 or so. Does that sound about right?
I am not 100% sure off the top of my head, but I would suspect in that range, yeah.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I believe most of those decks will probably be about the same price. It's like, I know we've had like the modern and like... we had like a standard type of set before, and those usually go for about $40 to $50. So that's what I'm gonna guess.
Yeah, not that we're much of a budget podcast. No. You know, usually we're just talking about the competitive side of things. But I think these are very exciting. I think they're a great pickup for anyone interested in the format. I'll start by saying that certainly. And then Ryan, if you want to jump into the questions we had,
yeah,
let's pull some information from the source.
Yes. So just to kind of let everybody else know that's listening, if they don't know what the Pioneer Challenger decks are, we have Azorius Spirits, which is a blue-white deck. We have Lotus Field Combo. We have Mono Red Burn, and we have Orzhov Auras. And my first question is, you know, what kind of research did you do before you worked on these Pioneer Challenger decks? Like, you know, how did you go about choosing these?
Yeah, so I have played a fair amount of Pioneer, and my goal was to find strategies that showcased some of the different things you could do. One of the things that I do think is interesting about Pioneer compared to something like Standard is that there are pure combo decks that exist. Mm-hmm. So I think being able to showcase that, like if you look at what our Standard Challenger decks usually look like, they don't always have, we don't always have that as like a realistic option that we can give you. So I think diversity of strategies, I wanted diversity of colors, and then just decks that ported well to like being competitive right out of the box. That was what I was hoping for.
Mm. So you said you played Pioneer, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if you said a lot or you played a good amount, but what decks do you like first? Maybe I should do that. Like what kind of decks have you played with?
Yeah, I have played with, earlier in the format, I was playing a lot of various, like, kind of Sultai Delirium-style strategies,
mm-hmm.
stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. I like playing these kind of slower, dirtly decks, personally. Those are a little bit trickier to do in this format, and I think that a lot of the more aggressive strategies are just easier hooks for new players. Mm-hmm. I've also played a fair amount of the Spirits deck and really enjoy kind of the tempo strategies as well.
Okay. So you're a blue player.
Yeah, I like playing, I like having some instant speed stuff going on in my deck.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if you've listened to any of our other podcast episodes, but I'm the anti-blue player, so...
Anti-blue...
Ryan is famously Artemi a little bit.
Yeah. yeah, so just to expand a little bit more on that, like as far as like, you know, research and stuff like that, do you look at metagames a lot? You know, like where do you get like all your data, your information from?
Yeah, so some of that is internal data, but I do like to look through like the decks that are doing well in challenges, leagues, mm-hmm. trying to get an idea of you know, what exact cards people are playing. Mm-hmm. And that was really important to me. One of the things I was really trying to do was build like authentic to real life versions of these decks as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And like trying to find correct sideboard cards, you know, the right numbers of cards, really just trying to map them to real world decks as much as possible.
Yeah.
So I poured through a lot of data in the like initial exploration, trying to figure out which lists would be good fits for this product, and then as it got closer to locking in like exact lists, I spent a lot of time looking at sideboards, some reading articles, watching Twitch streams, all that kind of stuff.
Nice, nice, nice. That's good to know. I'm glad to hear that, you know, you're out there kind of like really getting your hands dirty, I guess you could say, you know, putting it into all the different places that you can get Pioneer content. Kevin, do you have any other questions about the deck choices or anything?
Well, I love that idea as just a deck builder challenge to try and, you know, put these together. Must have been really interesting, hopefully, for you. They're very interesting for me to look at, is just thinking about, oh, yeah, you know, a couple of those cards, a few of this card, just looking at the sideboard. A lot of imaginative choices, it feels like. So do you want to expand a little bit more on what influenced some card choices for the deck? Or were there any real decision points that you had to decide on?
Yeah, because you can't really choose four of this and four of that. You kind of have to be really creative. So, please expand a little bit more on how, you know.
Yeah. Would it help to go deck by deck? Or would
you have some? Sure, happy to go deck by deck.
So starting with the Azorius Spirits deck, you know, that one, it is blue-white. You know, we have seen green or mono-blue as well in the format. But so this is a pretty aggressive deck. I see some interesting sideboard options. I don't know, anything that jumps out to you, feel free to jump in here.
Yeah, my goals with this deck really were to get kind of a just like strategy diversity. I think that this deck plays a lot differently than the more aggressive Burn or Auras decks. And card choices, like, what I really wanted was a good base that you could build from. In some of these strategies, it's a little bit trickier to get everything that we'd like in there. But I think that this, you know, like four Supreme Phantoms out of the box, but also a deck where if you do want multiple copies, like, you'll end up with four Spell Quellers, four Mausoleum Wanderers, that kind of stuff. So trying to make sure that it scales okay in multiples, but also that it plays well out of the box.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a really cool point.
Yeah, I mean, I just like that, you know, we actually got two Spell Quellers, Selfless Spirits, also very nice. We had a lot of these cards that were kind of getting harder and harder to get, and I'm really happy to see those. I did want to ask a little bit about the lands, though, if you don't mind. So how did you go about building the land base, and, you know, why didn't you use, like, some of the other colored lands instead of the ones you went with? So you have like two Glacial Fortress, 10 Islands, 7 Plains, and 4 Temple of Enlightenments. And I guess I want to focus more on those dual lands there. Why go with these dual lands? Why go with the Glacial Fortress and Temple of Enlightenment?
Yeah, this was one of the places where there's a little more compromise required in this kind of strategy. The allied mana in Pioneer in general is a little bit on the weaker side. And these were the lands that, like, that I think gave the best experience out of the box that I had access to. So I think that, like, if you're looking to upgrade this deck, one of the places I would look to do that is in the mana base. I did consider some other things, like, I thought about potentially copies of Unclaimed Territory, stuff like that, but ultimately decided that with Watcher of the Spheres not being a spirit.
True.
It's tricky. And I think that this provides, like, the clearest place I would upgrade this deck is in the mana base. If I were looking to do that myself.
Yeah. Kevin, do you remember? I think we said, like, we kind of wish we had something like Port Town or something in there, maybe.
It's definitely, I think, you know, the temples are pretty strong, the Glacial Fortresses, those come in untapped pretty much all the time. I think this isn't bad.
The mana base could definitely use some improvement, but I do think that realistically it will be okay at casting the spells, and I think just even more copies of Glacial Fortress, some Hallowed Fountains, or
of course,
Hengegate Pathways would also be good additions.
Ooh, that's good. I can never remember them without looking them up. Those in the Czech lands always mess me up. The enemy Czech lands are the ones that mess me up every time.
All right.
I'm happy to, let's look at the Lotus Field one. I think we had said a little bit about this one just being one of the ones that seemed almost complete right out of the box, just because it had that four copies of Lotus Field, four copies of Thespian Stage, and then everything else is almost gravy.
I was going to say, before we jump into that, I just wanted to ask Michael, like, it feels like it's these decks almost built themselves, like, especially when you're looking. I don't know if I want to say cost influences you, but it must be nice to be able to just build an entire deck with uncommons, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that makes it, like, one of the nice things about this list is that you are able to get both 4 Lotus Field and 4 Thespian Stage right out of the box, and that was something that was critical for me in selecting this deck. I don't think it's very functional without 4 copies of either. So while, like, I think Spirits, you know, you can upgrade the mana base and it will make the deck stronger, I don't think Lotus Field functions at a base level without 4 copies of each of those.
Yeah.
So I was really happy that we were able to do that. And I think that, like you said, this is pretty functional right out of the box. There are changes you could make that, you know, there are probably improvements you could make if you'd like, but I do think that realistically,
see, Ryan, I'm trying to, you know, butter him up, say that I'm appreciating all of the intricate design decisions here, and you're like, man, isn't it great that these decks build themselves?
I'm just saying, like, for this type of deck, it's just I'm so excited about this because like he said, it's good to go right out of the box, and that's like so rare. I think with
it, these it came together decks really well. I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very excited that we could get all of that in there. And it's definitely easier when a lot of the cards in this deck are not used other places nearly as much. Or are, you know, there are a bunch of kind of unusual cards in this deck, cards you just really don't see other places. So I don't know how much you've played with Vizier of Tumbling Sands, but it's kind of nice to have decks that, I mean, first of all, some of those cards are easier to squeeze in, but second of all, fun to kind of get cards that are off the beaten path a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that kind of parallels, you know, if you're a casual deck builder and you're going into your box of, oh, hey, I've got, you know, some draft commons from this set, it's easy to put together a deck like this. And as long as you've got the core pieces, it'll feel good.
Uh-huh. And I think this is a deck with a really high, like, mastery ceiling. And it's also a deck that, at least when I've seen lists online, they change a lot from player to player, especially on the sideboard. So I think there's a lot of room to sort of optimize this to your liking. Yes. But yeah. I do think that functionally this will play well out of the box.
Yeah. And I
was going to ask about the sideboard. That's a very interesting point here, is that, you know, you do have a wish board here. You've got the Fae of Wishes, Mastermind Acquisition to pull cards out of the sideboard. Did you look at an idea for this deck to just run your win cons in the main and not have that sideboard wish board kind of plan?
I like one of the things that's important to me with these decks is that they remain as authentic as possible to real world decks. I think that, like, with kind of the challenger deck line, when we've done that for standard as well, we're really trying to imitate what has been successful in the real world. And basically, although I think this is more complicated for a beginner level product, or like maybe these are probably more realistically like intermediate level products.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of value in trying to emulate the optimal lists as closely as you can, even if it's more complicated sometimes.
Yeah. This gives you tons and tons of tools to work with, though. I mean, I want to applaud this deck. I just think it's great. And I think a lot of people will be picking this up and playing almost right out of the box. And that's got to make you happy, too, where, you know, people will just be buying it and playing it, you know, right away, you know, at their Friday Night Magics or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That was one of my goals, that as many of these decks as possible, just you can buy them at your local game store and sleeve them up and you're good to go.
Yeah, I know for someone like me, I'm probably going to pick up hopefully all 4 of them and then just have them in my box so that if someone wants to play Pioneer, they're not familiar with the format, I can just, you know, whip one of these out and it's ready to go.
Right, make things a little bit easier. It's nice to have that stuff around when you have friends who don't play quite as much as you do.
And I have heard, actually,
look at the mono red.
Let's move on to mono red. But yeah, I just wanted to say I've heard that people have been like playing these on MTGO as is, like how you would play them right out of the box, and they've been doing well with them. So
nice.
So very well built, I thought.
Yeah, and if you're shouting that out, you know, Tyrant of Tales, I think, was the one who set it up.
We
ourselves and some other streamers went on and we're playing them against each other just to test them all out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the red deck is probably the most straightforward of all the decks. But I really liked having a deck with so many clean four ofs.
Mm-hmm.
I think realistically there are changes you could make, but they're much closer to preference changes than power level changes.
Yeah.
The mono red has been, you know, a strong strategy in one flavor or another, basically throughout Pioneer, and I expect that it will continue to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think mono red has kind of changed depending on the meta game. Like there's a couple cards that would change due to the meta, but otherwise great core deck again, I think.
Yeah, this is also another one where I noticed that the answers in the sideboard are very broad, and I like that. You know, it would be possible to be more focused if you were trying to target specific decks, but for right out of the box, I like that these kind of cover all of your bases.
Yeah, I think it gives you some options, gives you things to go to against different strategies, and realistically, like, I expect this is one of the decks that is very beginner-friendly, but also something that you can probably grow into a little bit over time, especially with changing mm-hmm. stuff in the sideboard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, mono red speaks for itself, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's I know people are playing Luris sometimes in that strategy, but I do think at the time I was building these, there were a lot of people playing Bonecrusher Giant,
mm-hmm.
and this deck just ports so cleanly as a Challenger deck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, I don't know about the other formats. I haven't really played them for a while, but I know that, you know, mono red doesn't show up a lot in other formats, does it?
It does here and there. You know, often a strong standard deck, and I guess burn isn't really mono red, but
yeah,
some flavor of burn or prowess is often very strong in modern.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, last one. Orzhov Auras, which I would kind of say is kind of like the original budget deck, kind of. You know, I remember when they played this for the first time. I want to say it was at the first and only Pioneer Grand Prix, or Magic Fest last January. I think there was a Japanese player that was playing this, so.
And let's make sure you're not saying budget deck is an insult. You're saying this was one of the decks that was winning in the format that happened to be
under 100, you
know, cheap on the budget.
Yeah, well. it was yeah. amazing. It was great. So it's changed a lot since then, and let's jump into this. Tell us, you know, how you came about choosing the cards for this, you know, and the colors and the lands.
This was another one of those decks where we could get pretty close to the real life. Like exactly what people are playing in paper. And I think that, like, I was kind of excited about getting to include Luris, because a lot of people are playing companions in these strategies. And just in general, I think that, again, this is like providing a little bit of a different experience, even from the mono red deck. Obviously they're both aggressive, but I think this, like, when I've played this deck before, I've been really impressed at how good it is at grinding and how good it is in aggressive mirrors. And I just enjoy the play patterns of this kind of strategy. I think a lot of players do too, like kind of the boggle style gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that this speaks to someone different than the mono red deck, and that speaks to someone different than the spirits deck, and that speaks to someone different than the Lotus Field deck.
Yeah, I feel like you've got four distinct styles of play here.
Yeah, I think that, like, that's something I wanted to emphasize as much as possible, and that's the kind of thing that is more true in a format like Pioneer than it often is in Standard, where the spectrum of possible play patterns is just a little bit narrower a lot of the time.
And I'm really happy.
Were there any other broader archetypes or play patterns that you were really trying to fit in that didn't make it into one of these four lists?
Yeah, I mean, I did some looking at a variety of other decks, considered some control decks as well, but was happier with these at the time.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I wanted to say that I was really happy that Forrest Ram Senior Edificer found their way into the black-white Auras deck, because that really is what, that's the engine that the deck needs, and I'm so happy to see four of them.
Yeah, and I think, like, realistically, this is another one of those decks that I would be totally comfortable just, like, showing up at FNM with, playing right out of the box, loaning to a friend. I think it's a good introduction to the format if you've never played before. There are, I think, pretty clear upgrade paths if you're interested in that. Mm-hmm. Like, again, you can probably improve the mana base a little bit, and, you know, there are other things you can do, but I think this is, like, a totally reasonable deck to have ready to go, and it's been fairly good for a long time now.
Yeah, I would say the glaring, I wouldn't say miss, but missing card, I guess. I wish we could have got, like, some Fatal Push. Like, one or two of those, but...
Yeah, I think that, I like, think those are totally reasonable as sideboard cards.
Upgrades, right?
Yep. But a lot of the time, one of the funny things about a deck like this is sometimes just your auras will outsize whatever your opponent is doing anyways. It's, you know, a couple of Ethereal Armors can do a pretty good Fatal Push impression sometimes.
True. Yeah. Yeah, I'm happy we got one Thought Season here. That's really cool. Again, like, there's just so many nice cards in these decks, and I'm really excited, you know, to try them out. And I did want to ask you one more question. I know that you guys can't play in, like, the professional events, the competitive events, but you can do, like, Friday Night Magic and stuff at local game stores, right?
Yeah, yep.
Are you going to take these decks with you and play at FNMs in the future?
Yeah, that's definitely something that I hope to do. I hope to pick one of these up and give it a try, at least. I haven't been able to play FNM in a little bit, you know, the past year and a half or so, but definitely something I'm looking forward to in the future and excited to have these available as options for sure.
And will you tell them afterwards?
That's a nice lead in, Ryan. Oh,
so I was going to say, will you tell them afterwards that you built it?
No, not about tooting my own horn like that. Yeah. Okay.
There you go. So I was going to say, that's a nice lead in, Ryan, because I didn't want to ask, you know, you don't want to ask somebody which one's their favorite children. I didn't want to ask which was their favorite deck, but maybe I can say it as, hey, if you're going to bring this to an FNM, which is the one you're gonna grab and try playing?
I'm a big SRAM fan. I think I'm going to probably play Auras.
Nice.
I can get behind that. I like that.
I think I have, like, one or two more questions, if you don't mind. So you talked about it a little bit. You said, you know, you kind of wish you were... Or not wish, but you said you had considered, like, a control deck or control archetype, you know, and a few other ones. So if you were to release a second batch of these Challenger decks, maybe in a year or two or 3 years, so can you kind of, like, let's say you have to choose four, what other archetypes would you like to explore? Not so much what deck, but, like, what type of decks, like, what archetypes would you explore?
Yeah, I would be excited to, like... To find a control deck that's a good fit for this product. I just couldn't quite find anything I was comfortable with when I was working on these in the past. It seemed like the control decks were a little bit less stable than a lot of the other stuff that was going on. So I had more worries about them not really resembling strategies people were actually playing by release time. But I do think a control deck, especially as, you know, if Pioneer settles a little bit more, is appealing to me. And then just trying to find other kind of unique feeling strategies. I think one of the things that I'm interested in this product is just, like, kind of showcasing the range of things you can do in Pioneer. So I think control decks, you know, are one side of that, but I just want to find more diverse stuff. Yeah, something, I don't know, I like the Insole Artifact decks a lot.
Okay, yeah.
Those have picked up some cards in AFR, I think, the Smith and the Blackstaff.
So, and Portable Hole, too.
Oh, right. Portable Hole is a strong one. Yeah, so just trying to, like, kind of keep diversifying the range of experiences and hopefully speak to more players is really try to give more players something that when they see it, they think, oh, wow, that really sounds like something I would enjoy.
Yeah. That's the big thing. I would say I think you hit it out of the park with these four. What about you, Kevin? You agree?
Yeah. You know, I was going to say something, and I was going to ask if this is on purpose. Is something we did notice when we were looking at these lists is that they largely weren't playing too many cards that were affected by rotation. You know, we just had standard rotate out of the four sets rotate out of standard, and I feel like a lot of these decks are focusing on using cards from before that time, so they weren't too much affected by, you know, cards coming in and leaving standard. I didn't know if that was at all on purpose, but that is something I think commendable, because I think that makes these slightly more appealing. You know, if you're looking at them as reprints, the reprints that we needed because they were not stuff going into and out of standard right now.
Yeah, it wasn't something I spent a lot of time thinking about, but you know, we do have, there are people giving me advice, a lot of really smart people, you know, advising me on stuff to do, and I'm really happy with the end product.
Yeah, some really happy accidents here, I think, that, or intentional. We'll say it's all intelligent design.
Yes, clearly everything thought through very well.
So I had one more, I don't know, I guess that kind of covers what I wanted to ask about the decks, the challenger decks, but I did have some general Pioneer questions, if you don't mind.
No, of course.
You know, like you said, you're a designer, you worked on everything over the last few years in Standard, and I think, you know, we've talked about, I mean, Kevin and I have talked about this before, like about fire design, or like, you know, how, you know, they design stuff like EDH in mind and whatnot, and I want to know, are new sets coming out being designed with Pioneer in mind these days?
One of the things I'm excited about as far as Pioneer goes is that cards in our standard sets can impact Pioneer. I think that sometimes is a little bit trickier for some Eternal formats, but the card pool in Pioneer is shallow enough that things we do can really have a big impact while still being appropriate for a standard set. So that's a spot I'm definitely excited to work on in the future, keep trying to find ways to impact Pioneer.
So it
is something that I think about here and there.
I was just wondering, like, would you say that, okay, maybe, I mean, you don't have to answer this if this is too direct, but would you say that because Pioneer is now a format, that that's kind of pushing the power level a little bit higher in standard?
I don't know that it's pushing the power level higher in standard. I guess one of the things I like about Pioneer is that I think compared to all of our other Eternal formats, really the power level is a little bit lower.
Yeah. So you see a lot more cards.
Yeah, I think there's just a cards that impact Pioneer aren't necessarily going to be problematic in standard. That's what I think that Pioneer is, like, there's healthy space to shoot for there in a way that's much more challenging for, say, Modern.
Yeah, yeah. Because you have to really, really push something for it to see play in Modern or Legacy.
Yeah, or it has to be engineered for a specific role.
Yeah, yeah, true.
I think, like, if you, yeah, just like looking at the cards that people play in Pioneer, there are a bunch of cards being played that are either in standard and are stronger in Pioneer than they are in standard. Like that's where I'm really excited about future Pioneer design space.
Yeah. Okay.
And you don't have to make an MH2 in order to get something at the point where it impact Pioneer. I understand that.
So Kevin, I'm sorry I've talked so much. Do you have any questions you want to ask?
No, you're doing great. You know, you tend to be, you keep us on track here, so I'm happy to let you talk, and I can fill in where we don't have a guest giving us all the information we needed. This has been really cool. I'm happy. Do you have any more questions, Ryan? Do we want to kind of move towards our wrap-up?
Yeah, I mean, those are the big things. Like, yeah, I wanted to talk about the decks, and I'm super happy that you decided to come on our show, and hopefully, you know, we can have you back in the future, you know, when you're working on something else cool and you want to share it with us, so always keep us in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me.
All right, that is going to bring us towards the end of our show. Thank you guys all for listening, and thank you one more time we really appreciate you coming on the show. If you guys want to follow our content, you can find us on Twitter is the best place at MTG Pioneer, as well as find a link to our Discord there if you want to be closer contact with us, ask any questions, check out deck lists. Make sure you're checking out these Pioneer Challenger decks. They should be dropping in your stores. I just saw the date, and now I'm trying to remember what 15th? It was. I want to say it's the 15th of October. That should be right. It's either the 14th or the 15th of October. Maybe call your LGS if you're not sure they'll have them in stock. Make sure that they will. Ryan?
Yeah, if you guys want to contact me, you can find me on Twitter at Yoshwenky, Yoschwenky. And, of course, like I said, or like Kevin said, join the Discord and hop in and, you know, get involved in the discussions, post your deck list, et cetera, et cetera. And Michael
Hopp. And whenever we've got a guest on, I was going to say, whenever we've got a guest on, we love anything you want to be shouting out at the moment, anything fun you're working on, or just anything you want to promote, you know, even just a friend you want to shout out, whatever you like. Now's take a minute and here's your opportunity.
I'm not going to promote anything. I don't really have, I don't know that I really have a good shout out in mind.
That's fine.
If there are questions you want to ask me or you would like to talk to me, you can find me on Twitter, at Hindi MTG. That's H-I-N-D-Y MTG. But I don't know that I really have anyone else to shout out.
Okay.
And we'll tag you after the show if that's all right when we post the when we post it online.
Yeah, sure, that's fine.
All right.
All right. So yeah.
Well, we really appreciate you joining us for this. This is cool. I'm glad that we got to really hear, you know, from the source exactly why these decks were built the way they are. I'm very excited about them. My enthusiasm has even gone up now, and I'm going to be looking for these as soon as possible.
I'll be grabbing a couple of them.
Yep.
Yeah, I hope that they, you know, as people hopefully are able to get back to going FNM here and there, I hope that they give you some options and make things easier for you.
Well, that's going to wrap up our show. We are the First Pioneers Podcast. We are a podcast all about the Pioneer format, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. Thank you one last time for joining us, and we are going to be wrapping up the show.